Off top, Alabama got some funny laws. Bet you're getting nervous, aren't you? Nope. So, you know, it's illegal to put salt on a railroad track in Alabama. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
What up, Charlie? Yeah, my son taught me that.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know what YouTube video he was watching, but it's about cows being killed or something.
I was literally going to ask what the reasoning was.
Yeah. It put me down this rabbit hole of all these other weird Alabama laws, like you can't sell peanuts on Sunday. And anyway.
One time I'll tell you a crime that I was part of committing in Alabama, but I don't know the statute of limitations, and so we'll save that for another podcast or off air.
You can't spray silly string in Mobile. Huh. All right, so we got a lot to talk about. We got a finals preview to do. We want to talk about the future of Jaylen Brown and honestly, like the future of NBA roster construction through that Jaylen Brown conversation. I got a Caleb Williams topic that I want to get to. He's the future number one overall pick out of USC, who's a DC native and should use his power, which I'm sure you're not surprised that I'm going to say that. We'll get to that at some point. But before we get to any of that, I need to let the listeners and viewers in on the conversation we were having beforehand. If you see, if you're on YouTube, which you can go to watch this show, you can see that Charlie has on a Taylor Swift concert tee because he went to the concert at MetLife in New York, I guess New Jersey technically, and he was telling me some things that I was shocked by. So where do we start? Where do we start with the ridiculous Taylor Swift? First, my first question is, I've seen like TikToks and videos of what's happening there. You think if Taylor was like, hey,
yes,
everybody in here, follow me to the state house. We're going to take over the state of New Jersey. Let's go bum rush the security guards and fight the cops. They would do it.
100%. And it would be a real conundrum for the cops because having 80,000 millennial white women, like what are the cops going to do? Politely ask them to stop? That's sort of their MO with that in that situation.
I wonder what they would have to do to get the cops to that point where they start letting off shots. So I know that she's a crazy big deal and they're like lunatic fans for everyone. And I imagine that of the 80,000 people that were there, 20, 30,000 of them were completely nuts. So give me some good stories.
No, way more than that. Way more than that. So first of all, so you get to MetLife.
Okay.
And you have to, if you park in one of the parking lots, you have to cross the highway in this like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a tunnel, but above ground tunnel, a tube type of thing. And you walk in this horde of people who are all...
Are they singing?
I mean, it's conscious, 80% women, 80% people 25 to 40 years old, all dressed with different eras of Taylor Swift, from the country era to like her Bad Reputation era to 1989. They're all dressed different. So you have like glitter tuxedos.
Bad Reputation is the album.
Reputation is the album.
Okay, yeah, I got you. So it was a bad era?
It was like her bad girl era.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
After she got like into her tiff with Kim Kardashian.
She's Kim Kardashian era now?
No. She had a feud with Kim Kardashian about Kanye West's song Famous.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was like she said her reputation was ruined and had her bad girl album.
Okay.
But they're all dressed in different Taylor eras. They all have friendship bracelets. They all know every single word to
She's co-opted friendship races that belongs to her?
I didn't know what this was, but apparently it was a throwaway line in one of her songs where she talks about friendship bracelets. And then you look at this concert and there's 80,000 people with like 25 friendship bracelets that all have like different Taylor lyrics or albums.
That's cute and sad.
But like she's going on at 8 p.m. 7:55, you just have an 80,000 person chant of just people going, mother, mother, mother. They're calling Taylor mother.
Shut the fuck up.
I swear to God. And this is like Phoebe.
They call her mother?
Yes. And like Phoebe Bridgers is performing ahead of time. No one is listening to a fucking word she's singing.
They're just
chanting for Taylor. So they see this countdown. They're like, it's bleeping Taylor time. And then she comes out, she's got like an 80-yard stage, and she touches every corner of it. The production value is insane. She goes for 3.5 hours, takes at most like a 90-second break, and people sing every word of it for 3 hours.
I know every people talk about word. Like, she's a great athlete.
elite endurance athlete.
Yeah, yeah, endurance athlete to go 3.5 hours of performance with a 90-second break across hundreds of cities, probably.
Three nights a week.
Goodness gracious.
14 weeks.
She's about 6 feet, right?
Yeah, yeah. I saw her at a coffee shop in Nashville. She's like tall.
She don't got no post moves?
No, no. She's you know, built like Manute Bol.
Oh, man. So, Nashville. Why? Oh, yeah, you went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah, yeah. So, she was supposed to be in my grade at Vanderbilt.
Oh, she got accepted to Vanderbilt?
And then she got famous and obviously didn't go.
Oh.
But so she lived like a block off of campus, and there was like a sandwich shop that like a lot of us would go to hungover on Sundays, and she was there, not like frequently, but.
So what happened when you shot your shot?
There was no shot shooting. She was already like famous at this point. Dating celebrities at this point. She walked in and everyone like it would. She'd like walk into this Bread and Co. and everyone get like silent and be like start whispering, and she'd just walk by and you could just see that she was like. A year ago, I was normal, and now I'm mother.
The fact they call her mother. So the fan thing is interesting to me. Like, I am no judgment on people who like become super fans of someone else. Like, whatever, that's fine. But I don't think I have that in me, or whatever it is. Like that, I think it might just be my ego. It's like I will, no matter how much I like you, at some point, I'm putting it down.
Yeah,
and I would not be mesmerized by anyone to that point.
So the way I would describe it is like, imagine Game 7 Cavs Warriors 2016, if everyone was rooting for one team in the stadium, and she does that 52 times in the stadium, every single time is that intense with the fans.
What?
Yeah, they
that crazy.
Oh no, and she was amazing. And like you might not think you're a Swiftie. Like I didn't think I was a Swiftie, and then you realize you know half the songs, at least half the songs.
I'm sure I know a lot of songs. I'm trying to put myself in that mindset. Who would it have to be? And I don't think that there is anyone. And like I mentioned before, my wife goes to all the Beyonce concerts. I've never been to one, but like that feels like a similar experience where it's just a lot fewer white women, I guess.
Yeah.
Still probably a whole lot of white women.
Yeah, yeah. She's a icon.
Yeah, she's a crossover icon. But
honestly, like the person who would know that much of their music can't go to his shows anymore. Sorry, Kanye.
Yeah. Yeezy does have a following.
He's
like
got
that. Like,
and also he's got like enough songs to have a greatest hits album.
All right. Is that all the ridiculous Taylor stuff that we need to talk about?
There was one funny thing. So we were in a box.
One funny thing?
Well, there was another funny thing.
Okay.
We were in a box for this, and I guess my friend who gave me this ticket, Scott, shout out to Scott, you're the man. He bought half the tickets in the box, and we were in the box with like a 14-year-old's birthday party with the mom and Jersey mom.
Oh, like a stereotypical Jersey mom.
She was nuts. Sherry was nuts. She was guarding like the front. So the box had like the buffet area and then the seats area. And she was like, none of us were like drunk or unruly or anything like that.
Old now.
And yeah, and like also there were a bunch of 14-year-old kids that we didn't want to be assholes to.
Yeah, right.
But she was like, you guys do not cross the line to the front of the box. I paid just as much as you do. And we're like, lady, we're fine. We just want to stand at the back and watch Taylor. We are fine.
So she owned the front of the box?
Yeah.
You guys were the back of the box.
Yeah. We had like, she tried to take the entire seats area.
Oh.
And that was like, we just sort of talked her down from it, but she got full like stereotypical Jersey aggro. And I thought this was funny because this is like a 48, 50-year-old woman covered in glitter wearing like a Taylor Swift pantsuit and is like trying to get like aggro, like the hands are going like this. We actually had this like the how dare you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small, and when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/DF today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/DF.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
All right, I've had enough Taylor talk. Let's get to basketball. All right, so the finals. This playoffs, I think, have been full of a lot of really impressive and interesting series, and I feel like we're ending at a championship game that's less interesting than the series. Like, I was thinking of all the other series that I've enjoyed or was at least more excited for.
Yeah.
I was more excited for each of the conference finals than I am for the championship. However, I do think I heard Mike Malone say that the Heat are the toughest test that they've had. And my first reaction was, oh, that's ridiculous. And then I was like, I guess, kind of. I mean, you're looking at the Suns, whom they took them to six games, but yep. The Suns were like, at no point did we feel like after game one, we were like, oh, this is not what we thought it was going to be.
Right.
It didn't seem hard for them. The Lakers, they swept, but they were close at the end.
What a close sweep.
It was one of those close sweeps. But I guess, are you buying it?
No.
You aren't. I think I am.
No, they had two games where Devin Booker and Kevin Durant like each scored 40 points, and Booker was shooting like 75% from the field. And we were like, well, shit, if he does this two more times, anything could happen.
Yeah. There's nobody on the Heat that can do that.
And I don't think that there's any matchup that scares them in this series.
Yeah, that was my big thing when we were talking about it. I was talking about it with Monica McNutt. It was like, where do you have the advantage? I mean, that's how I tend to like break down sports, is like, where do you have the advantage? What's the answer to the advantage? Like, it starts at that central piece, and I'm trying to figure out where they have the advantage. Like, Bam is faster than Jokic, but the Heat play at a slow pace. They don't want to speed it up and increase the possessions. When you're playing against a more talented team, the more possessions you have, the less likely it is that you're going to like prevail. The Heat plays slow because of that. And the Nuggets are comfortable playing fast, especially with Jokic outlet passes. Like, they play fast.
And I also just think that, you know, the Heat have had a bad offense all year, mm-hmm. and they've been able to drag teams into the mud with them, make it a rock fight. And Jimmy's been able to like make clutch basket after clutch basket, draw fouls, can stop runs. Like, the Nuggets, when Jokic is on the floor, are a historically great offense, and that is not going to get stopped by the Heat zone or anything in the Heat's defense. It's a terrible matchup for them. But I mean, this is part of the Heat's thing where they could be up 3-0 in this series, not by 20 points in game four, and I'd still be like, terrible matchup. The Nuggets are going to win.
Yeah. But I mean, so then where do you, looking back at the Celtics series, we can say it was 3-point shooting. The difference in their 3-point shooting, we can say, was kind of the difference in this.
Yeah.
If we get to a point where the Heat are up 2-0 or are tied 2-2, what would have happened in those games? That's the thing I'm having a hard time imagining. And it wasn't that hard to imagine the Heat doing that to the Celtics because they did it last year. Like, they took it to game seven, a shot away
last
year.
And there was something really off with the smell of this Celtics team from the Hawks series on.
The Nuggets smell great.
They smell like those crispy nuggets. They smell so dank.
Fresh out the oven. All right. So
we were talking different nuggets.
I know. I went to the Disney Nuggets.
I went to the Denver Nuggets.
Perfect. Yeah.
So you're asked, like, what's the path for this to look different?
Yeah, I just say looking once, what would you have said happened? Like, after this, they win, say they're up, or it's 2-1 going back to. Or it's 2-1 before game four. What would have happened in those wins?
I think that there are a few things. The first
short one, of injury.
No, I was going to say Jimmy Butler taking more than 10 free throws a game, I think, is a huge one for the Heat setting their defense and slowing down the pace. Caleb Martin in the conference finals scored 19 points a game, averaged 6 rebounds on 60% shooting and 48% from three. As the heir to Austin Reeves, if he's able to keep his performance at this rate, it actually changes the Heat's offense because you have a second perimeter creator. And of course, if Hero comes back, potentially you have three, and the optionality of their offense is a lot different. And then the really obvious one that I do not think is going to happen is that Bam becomes, we talk about bubble AD a lot. If he becomes bubble Bam, where he can actually start making elbow jump shots, taking dribble handoffs to the rim hard, and is an effective scorer on Jokic.
Exploit that. I mean, Jokic is framed as weak on defense, which I think is a fair characterization of him if you're looking for a weakness in his game. But
he hasn't been abused by the pick and roll in this playoffs. But of course, they're also, he hasn't faced. Anthony Davis was great, but he wasn't a big who really was testing him in different ways inside and out. Like, his jump shot betrayed him these last couple of years. So he wasn't able to draw Jokic away from the basket and then, go by him.
So it's not completely unrealistic. I think you said you got them in four. Was that a real pick? You don't think the Heat can get one?
I got them minus 3.5. So in zero or one.
All right. I mean, I'm giving them two, just Heat culture, which is amorphous and fun to just point to when you have nothing else to say. Just say Heat culture.
But
they're
the toughest, most conditioned team. Like, the thing about the Heat, and this is actually something that we should give them credit for, is them not just completely gacking and rolling over and dying in game seven against the Celtics after losing three consecutive games is an absolute testament to the fact that they're not going to roll over no matter what against this Nuggets team. It's going to be Spo yelling burn the boats every single game.
Yeah, well, we'll see what they can put together for next year's run, because we've already all kind of accepted that they lost the finals, which isn't fair. Yeah. They're 8 seed. They've already defied logic a bunch of different times, but I think people are already talking about Damian Lillard, but they'll have room.
I think that this team, with their coaching staff, Butler, and the flexibility of their roster, should be considered the favorite or the co-favorite with anyone else in the East going into next year.
That's an interesting. I was going to go pivot to the Jaylen Brown contract conversations, but remember when we thought the East was better than the West this year, and we're like, the East is finally better. We always talk about the West, but the best teams are in the East. Look at all these good teams. And the 8th seed made it to the finals. The Bucks' future is kind of interesting and not all that exciting, considering the age and the contract situations around their players. Yep. You have the 76ers moving on from their coach, not sure where James Harden's going to be, and Embiid's injury concerns and health is always hanging over him. Am I missing anybody? Like, before you get to the stability that is the Miami Heat.
Well, I just think that the bloom came off the rose even for the young teams this year.
The Celtics.
Well, Celtics and even some teams like Cleveland and Toronto, that before the season, we were looking at them and we were like, okay, is Evan Mobley going to be the next Tim Duncan or Kevin Garnett? Not that he's not an incredibly promising player, but them flaming out against the Knicks the way they did in the postseason was significant. The Raptors fired their coach. Fred VanVleet might walk. Scottie Barnes regressed as a shooter. So even those, the young teams are slightly less appealing in the East. But to me, it's those three. It's the Sixers. What's going on there is fascinating. Do you have any faith in that team figuring it out?
None. I mean, Tyrese Maxey is going to have to become his best version of himself all the time. That's their hope. Tobias Harris, turn back the clock. I don't know what they can do there. And Embiid get some new knees.
And doesn't like when Embiid gets old, it might get like, do you remember like old Shaq? Like we might see Celtic Shaq Embiid.
Embiid's not young either.
No, he's, I think he's 30 next season.
Yeah, that's crazy how old Embiid is already. And anyway, the Celtics is probably, I would think, before this series, actually before this morning, if you asked me what team I would want to like own or coach or be a fan of going forward, who has the most promising future, I would have obviously said the Celtics. And I still might say the Celtics, but part of the reason why I was saying that was because I still think Jaylen Brown is an incredibly valuable piece that they control. But you and I had a conversation this morning about the implications of the new CBA. And it, I guess our general feeling or coming out of that is it's going to be hard to add players once they sign him, which isn't like, it's always hard to add players, but you can always do it.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to do it going forward.
Unless you like match salaries perfectly.
Yeah.
And get someone. Well,
so I guess the interesting part about this to me is Jaylen Brown's eligible for an extension. He has one more year on
5 years, $295 million.
He has one more year on his contract.
Yeah.
Normally when a player is eligible for an extension, there's no reason to discuss it. You sign him because it was easier to move him. Because the ethos of NBA roster management was don't lose an asset for nothing. But now because of the restrictions on what you can trade and how the money has to be perfect, you can't add straight cash to the deal. Having an asset just to have an asset, it's not going to necessarily be easy to move him. So you're not committing to, or you are committing to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum as your future in a way that you never have before in NBA history, because you could move a guy, you could package up some stuff and get him out of town. Now it's like, no, if you sign him, it's going to be almost impossible to trade him. And it's going to be even more difficult than it's ever been to bring in pieces around him. So the question that we've been having is, can you win with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum as the core of your team? My answer has always been yes, because I think I've been viewing this as how the NBA CBA impact player movement in the past. And now it's going to impact it in a way where I'm hesitant. I might be more comfortable with having a little bit of space to make some other decisions.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's a really limited superstar. And that's not to say that he's not a star player. Like, he made second team All NBA both because of durability and because of talent. But you're basically getting someone. He's been the Celtics' fourth best perimeter defender this year. He's been a degrading defensive player for the last couple years. He does not pass the ball. He does not handle the ball. And do you remember in the 2014 finals when LeBron got cramps?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the story after that game was like, wow, LeBron got cramps. They lost game one. How could that happen? He's supposed to be like this ultra durable athlete. But the story for me was you looked at Dwayne Wade and he could not create offense on his own without LeBron on the floor. And when that got exposed with Wade, it was that it was exposing that he's at a different state of his career. What Jaylen Brown is exposed is he's not a 1B. We thought the conversation began to switch after last year's finals when Tatum had the hurt shoulder and Jaylen Brown actually was this aggressive offensive player who could use advantages against the Warriors. Maybe they have a 1A and 1B. They don't. They have a 1B and a 3. That's Jaylen Brown is a third piece on a really good team.
Do you think that with a healthy Tatum and Jaylen Brown being, even if he's a 3 and he never gets any better than that, they're better off attaching themselves to that pair for the foreseeable future, or, and obviously it depends on what they can get for him, or trying to move Jaylen Brown now? Because of the extension, because he made All NBA, he's now eligible for an extension that he wouldn't have been eligible for otherwise.
Right.
Which means when a player like that gets extension eligible, you give him the extension. You can't now just bring him back and have him play under this other contract. And if you try to do that, then you get to the point where you lose him for nothing. So back to my original question, Would you move him now?
I would trade him.
This offseason?
Absolutely.
Try to get him off your roster.
Well, it's not just, it's not getting him off my roster. There are plenty of teams that would want. Well, it's not like I'm trading him because I just want to get rid of you. I'm trading him because, okay, if they won a title with those two, it would be a historical anomaly of the best two, of those being your best two players winning a title. Like, we went into three Eastern Conference series with the Celtics, and except with the exception of the Hawks in round one, Jason Tatum wasn't the best player in any of them. Like, on paper, I know he outplayed Embiid in the conference semis, but I think if you were to ask, would you rather have Embiid or Tatum in a vacuum, you'd say Embiid. And same with Jimmy Butler or Tatum when it comes to playoff series. So you're basically saying you're going to win the title with someone who's sort of out of the realm of best player in a title team. That doesn't really, doesn't happen often. So, it happens 2004. And then the other thing is when that happens, it's, the team is so spectacular. And yeah. I think you could even say that about the 2014 Spurs, but you're going to look at the Celtics team and Marcus Smart is aging out of the player he was. Robert Williams can't stay on the floor. Al Horford is old and he has minutes where he can look great and minutes where he can look like he's not the same guy. Grant Williams is probably going to leave this offseason. And unless you expect Tatum and Brown to take significant jumps, Malcolm Brogdon also old, Tatum and Brown to take significant jumps and go from being nice star pairing to superstar pairing, then yeah, like you have to trade one of them to try and win the title.
So my pushback would be look around at the other pairings and who has a better pairing than them, even if you're considering Jalen Brown.
Apparently it's Jimmy Butler and Caleb Martin.
Okay, let's be serious.
Caleb Martin was better than Jalen Brown.
I agree. But you're betting on that. Would you trade Caleb Martin for Jalen Brown? So yeah, no one's betting on that. I'm being serious about this. So who would have a better pairing? And we have to also accept that everyone in the league is going to be dealing with these same restrictions. So if you look around the East, I don't know who would have a better pairing. And you look at Jason Tatum's age and his trajectory, he still can get better. So saying that he's not better that Embiid is in a vacuum and he's not better than Jimmy Butler is in the playoffs this year, I think is short-sighted. And I think we're going to have to accept that Jaylen Brown is not going to get better at the things that he struggles with because he's been struggling with those things ever since he got in the NBA. And presumably, especially after last year when it was on the biggest stage, it was exposed, like you can't dribble, you can't pass. Presumably, he put all his effort into improving that and he had the perfect opportunity to demonstrate it for all of us in Game 7 when Jason Tatum's ankle got rolled and he didn't get there.
He's just not an interesting player because he doesn't make his teammates better. I mean, that like there's limits of... So that's, I guess, that's a limitation for Tatum too, is that their roster construction is guys who are isolation scorers in certain ways and like... That's never been my cup of tea as basketball players, so I might be biased.
I rambled long enough that I got you off of the question.
Of the duos?
Yeah, of like, what's a duo right now that you would project is a more talented? Because right now you're making the argument that that Jason Tatum's not the best player on the court in major series against the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
But now if you put them together, who's a better duo going forward? And I guess I'm trying to make
the
argument.
They're the ones playing in the finals. Jokic and Murray is the obvious
East.
One.
Just
in the East?
Yeah, just in the East. And I think that's the argument for keeping them together is you don't want to panic and everyone else is going to be having the same difficulties as you.
Yeah.
Jalen Brown's probably not going to get better. Jason Tatum still, I think, could get better. He's shown improvement in his playmaking.
And he can do he can do what Durant and Kawhi did, where they're not additive passers, but they're good passers, which is something I think Tatum is willing to do. But he's never going to be a point forward type of guy who's going to control the pace of the game and be a queen of the chessboard.
So you need a point guard is what you would want.
But the thing is, like, the value of Jalen Brown, like, would you trade him to Atlanta for DeJounte Murray and DeAndre Hunter? Because I would.
Both of them.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
For both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. If you would have asked me this before these conference finals, I probably would have said no. And probably before I started to look at the implications of the new salary cap, I would have said no. Give me this core and I'll continue to like go into the luxury tax and make trades that I'll have to pay for way off in the future to build up a roster around them. Those things are going to be much harder to do under new salary cap. So I think I might. Yeah,
that's the interesting. There are interesting packages before he signs this contract that I would find appealing to see if you can get a different version of Tatum. Like putting him with a great passer, someone who's a great defender, someone who can set him up to score more easily. Like I loathe comparing him to Kevin Durant, because as much as I sort of crap on Kevin Durant, he is so unique in the ease that he can fit in and score. But there are aspects of that you see in Jason Tatum that I think he could fit with a lot of players who could really help him be like a truly, truly elite, unstoppable scorer.
He doesn't have the diversity of moves and mid-range games, Kevin Durant, but I see what you're saying.
Length and ease of which he scores. Right. Like, it'd be really interesting to see him play with someone who sees the court in a different way as a co-star than Jaylen Brown.
Right. All right. So the hardest thing for me moving forward in this conversation is understanding how this is all going to pan out in the new CBA. I think we have a decent understanding of it, but I think what people aren't saying is that we might have seen Jaylen Brown in his last time in his Celtics uniform.
I think
uniform.
We have.
Yeah.
I think we have, for sure.
And it's the Celtics been a, though ruthless, pretty smart organization. Yeah. And if you and me are coming to the conclusion that Jaylen Brown puts a cap on them that I'm not sure they want to accept, then they might be coming to a similar, or at least entertaining that, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think we know that they entertained the Kevin Durant, Jaylen Brown trade talks earlier this year. We know that Jaylen Brown has long said that he wants to test free agency. But the interesting thing to me, and this is something that we never would have said with the prior CBA, with a 26-year-old wing going into his prime with a max contract, which is the second he signs that contract, he is a bad contract for the organization.
And I think that's the big thing that we can walk away as you and I try to get our hands around how the new CBA is going to impact player movement, how it's going to impact roster construction. I think that's the thing that we need to get our heads around, and it might take some time for all of us in sports media to understand and accept this is, before we looked at it, there was no such thing as a bad contract.
Right.
You could kind of get from under all bad contracts.
Russell Westbrook just built a title contender.
Yeah. You could move just about anybody. And the worst crime you could commit in roster construction was to lose an asset for nothing. So when someone's is extension eligible, you give them the extension, you figure it out later. But now I think we're moving into a world where you actually are going to have to make a real decision about whether you sign these people to the extensions, and the first big test of it is going to be Jaylen Brown, and they could impact their championship aspirations dramatically.
And it's all from making all NBA is the crazy part. They actually put in the Jaylen Brown stipulation in the new CBA had he not made all NBA, where he could have gotten a 40% raise instead of a 20% raise. And I think those contracts, ironically, are going to become incredibly valuable. Guys who get the baby max, that rookie max, and then have the 40 or 30, whatever teams negotiate, that little bump, because there are going to be so many of those around the league that they're going to be so easy to match. But Jaylen's is going to be uniquely huge, and he earned his all NBA spot. I'm not going to like that. He had a good enough season. It was 26 points a game, but it was also this really unique year with injuries and load management that I don't think anyone really thinks he's one of the five or six best forwards in the NBA.
It's so interesting that they, with all the max contracts that are available, and like these, it's a slotting essentially where players are getting more money than they deserve because they happen to be eligible for the max and they're the best player on their team. Some players are having their salaries suppressed because of it. And if there are other distinctions that you can fall into with 40% raise, that there's not much really to talk about or negotiate for. It's kind of like, this guy's eligible, this is what you pay him. But having these players like that available, and having having the money that you need to construct a roster is really hard to do in the NBA. It always has been. I think it's getting a lot more difficult in understanding how much you can apply to a specific player. We think about it, percentages of a salary cap. It's going to be interesting. And the decision this offseason is about flexibility versus certainty.
Yeah.
With what they have now, they can get to the finals.
Yeah.
And could probably win the championship. But they won't have...
Maybe.
They won't have all the things around what they have now going forward.
They won't. And also, like, I think they realize that they're going to need a lot of things to break right. I mean, obviously every team needs a lot of things to break right for them to win a championship, but they will need a good amount of luck that we aren't going to think about for those past Warriors teams, this Nuggets team, et cetera, et cetera. And The question is, I think, do you want to invest in hoping that everything falls to shit around you and you win the title that way? Or do you want to try and move the pieces around Tatum because you have this asset that theoretically for the next 4 years should be one of the eight best players in the NBA? And if can you elevate him to be a true number one if you put different pieces around him?
And you'd opt for maintaining your flexibility. But I guess it, so.
I just don't think it's that great of a fit. I don't think Jaylen Brown is as valuable as that contract.
Because you're not even maintaining flexibility. You're just committing to other players. If you
Maintaining flexibility for sure. Because well, I guess it's two smaller pieces and contracts that can be moved.
Which are. So have we settled as a show on they should move on from Jaylen Brown?
I mean,
I hate that, but I think it's the right thing.
We love beautiful basketball. And there's one thing that you can say is that the Celtics playing with Brown and Tatum, this might be like a mutually beneficial parting of ways too. Yeah. He might play more beautiful basketball with a different guard who's less ball dominant around him too.
Yeah, I don't know where that's going to be, where he's going to play better than he's played. He's been all NBA. You think he's going to be all NBA somewhere else?
Oh, no. I mean, you might just love putting up empty stats somewhere.
That's also such a weird thing about how some of these distinctions are, and all these distinctions are decided by NBA writers.
Yeah.
And it can impact your salary while also you have load management, as you mentioned before, impacting all of that stuff. It's just a weird thing that the NBA has to create these, you know how I feel about player movement and player freedom. Like that's when I become like a real capitalist. It's like, yeah. I don't want all these rules. We don't need a salary cap, because once you institute a salary cap, that's when you start to institute all these other rules to try to make it fair. And it only gets more and more complicated and less fair for the players, honestly.
Yeah.
But like, why do you need the writers involved? You need them involved because you don't trust any other way to do it, and you need to give players so much potential upside. But for players who are at the top, there are lots of players who are making as much as players who are much more talented than them.
Yes.
And that, to some degree, limits the ability of other teams, because you might be able to build a team that's a collection of a bunch of really good players, but you're going to have to give somebody the max because he's the best player on your team. And then you have to move on from all these really good players. So like all these distinctions, I don't think make for a better product for us on the court.
I completely agree.
I'm shocked. I thought you were going to take the management side.
No, I know. I think like the salary structure for the NBA is completely broken. Like whether it's no salary cap or no max salaries, and actually like put the screws to teams to balance their cap in a way that's
lazy. That
values players correctly. To me, that's more interesting than just being like, oh, like you're scoring these inflated numbers in a league that's playing at a really high pace with people not trying in the regular season. You get a max contract and you get a max contract and it's all equal. And like, that's, I mean, look, we're in DC. The pitfalls of that are really obvious to us. Just you're paying
Bradley
Beal and you did it with Wall and you're just like, you have someone who's scoring because that's just what happens in the NBA and you pay them. And it's like, that's silly management. It also...
And the Celtics didn't pay Isaiah.
Yeah.
And he was on his way to that.
Backing up the Brinks truck.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sad. They brought him out there, too. That made me sad, too, when they brought him out there to, like, get hype for the game. Like, y'all did him right. Y'all did him dirty.
They did him so dirty.
And then they brought him out there to, like, get them fired up, which is why they lost. They got cursed.
You and I have both had that hip surgery, and it's, like, fairly unpleasant.
Yeah, it is pretty unpleasant. It wasn't that unpleasant for me because I'm tougher than you.
That's true.
But it sucked.
Yeah. I mean, I was like sitting at a desk on crutches in my office job afterwards being like,
I was playing football.
Yeah.
And the NFL.
Yeah. Are we done?
No, we're not done. I was going to wait out the awkward silence as much as I possibly could. The world that I would love to see is a world without a salary cap. That's not going to happen. Eliminating the max salaries, I think, leads to a world where you get more competitive teams.
Yeah.
Where you have, and also like we were talking about how there are restrictions after a certain age. Like LeBron can only get a 2-year max, which to me, like I get the reason for it, but all this is about is ways to curtail player power because the teams and the general managers don't have whatever leverage or heart that they want to have to make the decision, but I think it hurts them in the long run. So like there could be a way that you address all this where it's like, all right, you're really good. We're going to pay you like you're really good, which means that what we can put around you won't be as great, which means that there are a lot of other players that are available for other teams to make those teams really good. And then you won't be like, all right, for LeBron at his peak, we have to pay the same for LeBron as his peak as this competitor that we have is paying for Bradley Beal at his peak.
Right.
They're never going to be able to compete. And that's not Bradley Beal's fault. That's not LeBron's fault. That's the general managers in the league's fault for imposing these stupid rules.
I totally agree. It also like tiers player empowerment in certain ways. Like I think it's what I would say is I think it's a lot more palatable for the fans for someone like LeBron James or Kevin Durant to push around his muscle and get teams to do what they want him to do than when it's, we can just continue to dump on the theoretical Bradley Beal, but like Bradley Beal forcing the hand of an organization, you're like, for who, for what, for why?
Yeah. And I mean, it's you can do Harden or Kyrie. Yeah, like, there are plenty of players aren't at that level.
But the second they're not as valuable to a team based on their contract slot as LeBron or Jokic or Embiid, the amount that they can push teams around and they can jerk fans around also changes because it's like you're just not. You just aren't as valuable when you're not getting paid as much. And so it's like that to me is like a solution that would actually make it more interesting for the fans as well.
Speaking of player power, there's one thing that we haven't seen happen in a long time. And I think with the introduction of NIL, there's a potential of it happening again. So Mike Florio presented the concept that Caleb Williams, the future. He's like the next big quarterback.
Honestly, tank for Caleb Martin also. Yeah.
Okay. Caleb Williams is the USC quarterback who is going to be the number one overall pick in this coming season. And he's the guy. Yeah. Like every 5 to 10 years, there's a guy that we're like, all right, this is a can't miss guy. And we're normally right about those guys. And he's the next one. So because the amount of money that he's able to make in college now, he has leverage to say to the NFL, no thanks. Not to the whole league, but to whoever is there who might want to draft him. And you remember Eli Manning did it. John Elway did it. John Elway did it because he had the leverage of saying, I'll go play baseball. Eli did it just because,
runs the league.
Yeah, him and his dad and his brother were already super powerful in the NFL and they could just do it. And I've always advocated for players to reject that first round team because I do think, aside from the part where it's just unfair, drafting people in general is unfair, I think it's really particularly unfair from a not deciding where you live, but in the NFL, your careers are so dependent.
Yeah.
And it's so dependent on how well an organization is run. And that determines how much talent you get around you. That determines how well you're going to be coached. That determines how well you're going to be protected. Like, there are a lot of things that are decided by that. And to me, the idea that a player with that type of talent and that type of value can have his career ruined if he ends up in a bad organization. Like, it not only sucks for the player, which is what I care about, it sucks for all of us, and it sucks for the league. Because as bulletproof as the NFL is, it's still better with stars.
You don't think it was good to have Trevor Lawrence playing for a coach that was kicking kickers and not a professional organization his first year in Jacksonville? No, I mean, like, I think this is fascinating, first of all. Shout out to Mike Florio for giving us this little gem of content.
Thanks, Mike.
That you completely made up and had no sourcing to Caleb Williams, but maybe Kyler Murray leaked this to you. the thing that's a bummer to me is that we've seen, like, I can't remember, the last three generational quarterbacks are Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck, and now Caleb Williams, is none of them are really ending up in, you know, major markets with established teams and coaches that haven't been like disastrously run. I guess Andrew Luck was coming off the Peyton Manning era, but you know, Ursay, Trent Baalke, the whole thing was bizarre.
That's the real benefit of the NBA draft lottery.
Yeah,
is that there's a chance that they're not going to an awful organization. The NFL, unless Peyton Manning randomly gets hurt, like, there's really not much of a chance that you're going to go to to organization that is good.
Yeah. And I just, like, I guess that's the big thing is, like, if it's not Arizona, who's going to possibly have the capital or the ability to trade up for that pick? Unless Caleb can have enough leverage, he can sort of actually choose where he's going to go.
And he should. And Roger Goodell should be a part of making sure that he does. Because I think the NFL, the quarterbacks are all that matter as far as people are going to watch football no matter what. but they're gonna watch it a lot more when you have good competitive quarterbacks in a bunch of different cities. And I don't think so. My theory on quarterback development has always been like the best quarterbacks in the league are more a product of their situation than they are of their own talent. Yeah. If you look around, you notice that a lot of all the top quarterbacks in the league came into good situations.
Yeah.
And I think that when you get drafted number one overall or top five overall, you clearly have the talent to succeed. Why do so many of them fail? And why do like so many quarterbacks that are drafted in the middle of the first round or later, or first pick in the second round, or all the way in the fourth round? Like, those quarterbacks succeed because they land in good situations where the organizations develop them well. Patrick Mahomes would have been good anywhere. Patrick Mahomes is great because he walked into a team that was already loaded with a coach that was really smart. What? You're laughing at me. What?
No, just like I'm glad that you included Patrick Mahomes in that. I'm surprised. Oh, yeah. I'm surprised because, I mean, maybe the greatest quarterback of all time.
We can go down the list. Like, I mean, Dak Prescott, everywhere. Yeah. Dak Prescott, he would not have been good everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, he was a fourth round pick. Things worked out so that he was on a loaded team at the time, and he was good enough and he got better. Russell Wilson, he was a third round pick. He landed in a good situation. They didn't put a lot of pressure on him. He got better as time went on. It worked out. Like, that's true of all of
arguing that Joe Burrow is actually the best quarterback in NFL.
Absolutely. Joe Burrow's the only one that I can think of in recent history where you dropped him in a crap situation and things were fine because that O-line was garbage. They gave him one good receiver and and then he was off and running. So Joe Burrow is the one that you could say is the exception to this rule. But name a quarterback that you think Aaron Rodgers, great situation, time to get ready.
This is such a chicken and the egg thing though, because like the quarterback also makes the situation. So sometimes it's hard to parse where it's like a lot of these pieces and these situations seem better when they have the quarterback.
It's not that hard to parse when you look at these teams though. Like all the teams that I'm naming were teams that were good and competitive the year prior, right? Like these aren't teams the Packers had. They were competitive. They had Brett Favre, who started to fall off, but they were good and competitive. Obviously, the same thing with the Cowboys and with the Chiefs. And I don't remember exactly how good the Seahawks were, but they seemed like they were pretty damn good.
They immediately had an incredible defense. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe it's a chicken and egg situation, but I guess I would like to have my egg in a nice, safe, warm nest. Mm-hmm. Don't throw it out there with Urban Meyer and the dangers of the world. So, like, I don't just say this for the sake of the player, because I do think it's unfair, as I talked about last week when I went on my anti-tanking rant, how it's really messed up to just spoil people's careers because you want a high draft pick. That aside, I think it sucks for all of us too.
Yeah.
If you let great players go to terrible situations.
I love that you just accidentally argued, like, in your pro player argument, that the only thing that matters is coaches and the organizations for Bill.
I'm not saying, that's fair. I did tell myself in the corner, but this is one thing that I learned when it comes to winning arguments is you got to give people, you got to walk them up to it. You got to explain it in a way that they would appreciate. So for all the people who were offended by my player first rants last week, now I'm saying no. This is about what's good for the teams and organizations and what's good for all of us as fans. A better product.
No, I mean, it's overall really interesting of how this is going, is how this is going to play out too, because if we have been privy to the rise of Caleb Williams in DC, but he's been a true prodigy who's wanted to flex his power since he became a college quarterback.
A friend of mine coached him in high school at Gonzaga, and he just said he was different. And DeMath is another like football power around here. And he was like, Caleb came in as a freshman and was the best player on the field and was the difference. The reason why they won a last second game was this guy. So he's been that guy for quite some time.
He's been prepared to be a professional quarterback for, I think, a long time. And, you know, this is someone who does basically use the transfer portal to be like, I want to be put in the situation to best develop and to be a professional football player. It's like a college football mercenary in a way that is really interesting. His ambition is incredibly high. I think this is much closer to a John Elway situation than it is a Joe Burrow situation, where they bantered for what, a day, that, oh, maybe he doesn't want to go to the Bengals. Like, this is a trash situation. Like, he is of a generation and of a type that I think will want to be in a place of his choosing, or at least a place where he does, where it's not terrible.
Yeah. I mean, the professionalization of college athletics is something that we've bemoaned before in the past, but this is a place where I think that it works out well for a player like Caleb, because I think he's thinking like a professional.
Yeah.
Like, moving to USC was definitely a decision that was like about his professional career and nothing else. He's going to get to hang out with Bronny next year. That'll be fun.
I forgot
get
about
to know
that.
Each other. Yeah, that's going to be the place to be.
Oh, wow.
USC. Like, they already probably have a ton of like actors' kids and directors' kids and other LA millionaires and billionaires of Philadelphia Place. You add the number one recruit in basketball.
Yeah, is going Collier?
There. I think the number one girls basketball recruit is going there too, or at least a top five girls basketball recruit is going there. And then Bronny, who's the biggest celebrity of all of them, is going there. That is going to be a fun place to be. I know when I was in college, as good as we were at football, the basketball team was always better. Like, they won a national championship. We won the first ACC championship that we had ever won. Or that we'd won in a long time. First conference championship in a long time. I think it was the first ACC championship ever. And we were competitive. I think we lost one game first year, two games the next year, and two games the year after that. And then my senior year, we stunk. But we were competitive. And we like felt good. We were important until the basketball players came to the party.
Yeah.
And it was over.
Juan Dixon and Lonnie Baxter walked in.
It was over. Nobody was looking at us anymore. I bring that up because I think that's what's going to happen in USC.
You think so?
Once Bronny shows up, you think Caleb's a bigger deal?
He might be the first player since Archie Griffin to win two straight Heismans. That could be a big deal.
Yeah, but I guess I'm thinking about a big deal to us and sports fans. And Bronny's a real deal, like real celebrity. I guess we got to look at the social followings.
I'm sure Bronny is a big deal.
So that's
following.
What I mean. Is like, when Bronny shows up, Bronny goes to the top of the list, no matter how good Caleb is.
This is going to be the big thorn in LeBron's side of playing with his son. That guy is not going to want to leave USC. He might get a PhD and be there for like another 10 years writing
this
a research
is, no,
paper.
No. This is, I certainly don't want to compare Bronny to Kendall Roy, but succession is in my mind, and that it doesn't matter how much money or power or influence that you have. If you've been dreaming of being an NBA player your whole life, like, that's still going to be more attractive, I think, than just being like the coolest kid on USC's campus.
You think he's just going to be grabbing Sam Presti by the face going, I'm the eldest boy.
He is the eldest boy. He's already been on the floor when you won a chip back when he had braids. No, I've seen that picture too much. I guess that wasn't when they won the championship. I'm talking about the baby pictures. That was just him in Cleveland. He was really young.
I remember him on the like championship dais when they won in Miami, and he was like a wee lad at that point too. Oh,
what is life to people like that? I can't imagine. Like, thinking about Taylor Swift looking out at 80,000 people chanting her, I was going to chant her name, calling her mother three times a week. All across the United States and probably across the world.
Oh, yeah. She's going to Europe after this.
That's got to be real challenging to.
Do you think you lose your sense of reality a little bit?
Your reality is not real.
It's not real.
I would not blame Taylor Swift if she did something crazy. Because, like, how could you not be crazy if you are in that? And the same thing for Bronny. Like, his whole life has been freaking weird. And I don't know. I guess him and his father have some extra ability to at least appear normal in the face of craziness, which is a skill.
I love LeBron, but I would never say he's appeared normal.
Considering
as normal as he could be.
Yeah.
But
I mean, LeBron hasn't done anything too crazy. He just lies occasionally.
He's just weird.
Yeah.
He's a little weird.
No, how could you not be?
Oh, no, it makes total sense.
He's a lot less weird than he should be.
Yeah. That's
a lot less weird than he should. Yeah.
I don't know. What's your favorite weird LeBron thing? Is it him rapping lyrics that he doesn't know? The fake books? Yeah. The lying and saying he knew everything?
I can relate to rapping lyrics that you don't know.
But you don't film yourself.
Yeah, I don't have that. I'm not an internet guy.
And then you don't see that video of you rapping the lyrics you don't know, and they're like, fucking killed it. Let's send this out to my 150 million followers.
I've lied about books that I've read before that I haven't actually read. Yeah,
We're friends with Mina and Pablo. Sometimes you just gotta fucking lie every time you've read it.
I read that. I also like made it through high school. Yeah. And I never read any of those things. Like
that's a good point.
Yeah, I didn't read anything. Yeah, it's easy. I knew Spark Notes either.
Oh yeah, you're fast.
No, I just smart enough to finagle my way around that. It was fine. In college, I didn't read because I was fast.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Good times, Charlie. Appreciate you. Thanks, Addie, Sarah, Christina, and Podville. We out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.